A very good afternoon and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company up until 14:30. Now, it's Wednesday, the 10th of September, 2025, midweek. And with schools on holiday, we know the rhythm of life feels a little bit different, hey? Now, whether you're enjoying a quiet afternoon in Rudret, running errands in Rundu, tending fields in Otapi, or relaxing at home in Ketmanshop, thank you for choosing Eagle FM today. Now, here on The Reading News Analysis, we don't just graze at the headlines. We slow down and ask the deeper questions. What does this mean for Namibians? How does it shape our lives, our opportunities, and our future? From national policies to local realities, we connect the dots that matter. And of course, your perspective counts. So share your thoughts with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp, or through the Eagle FM website and app, because this show is just as much about you as it is about the news. Now, from the salt breeze of Hantys Bay to the warmth of Otjinene, from the busy streets of Mariental to the open spaces of Kamenyup, wherever you are tuned in this Wednesday, we are glad to have you with us. This is On The Reading News Analysis, Namibia's stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. Let's get right into today's discussions. Today marks World Suicide Prevention Day, and this month, September, is World Suicide Prevention Month, a global observance held every September to unite communities in suicide awareness and prevention. Now, it falls under September's Suicide Prevention Month, a time dedicated to raising awareness, dismantling stigma, and reinforcing the message that suicide is preventable. Namibia is confronting a silent crisis. Data paints a distressing picture. Namibia continues to rank among the countries with the highest suicide rates in Africa. Now, according to the World Health Organization, it registered about 9.7 suicides per 100,000 people, placing it at or near the top of the continent. Now, more recent figures suggest the situation is worsening. Between August 2022 and June 2023, Namibia recorded 623 suicide cases, of which a staggering 82%, that is 511 individuals, were men. Now, those figures translate to an estimated 21 suicides per 100,000 population. By comparison, the Ministry of Health and Social Services reported 542 suicide deaths in the 2023-2024 financial year out of 100,297 mental health cases, further underscoring the nation's growing mental health burden. Now, who is most affected and where? Just do we begin to even speak about this? Let's engage now Kafuna, who is a mental health advocate, and he's going to help us break this down even much more further. Good afternoon, Kafuna. It's a pleasure to have you with us right here on The Reading News Analysis.
Thank you, ma'am.
Now, of course, we're talking about mental, not just mental, but the two are connected. Suicide Prevention Month being September. Kindly share with us, for you being a mental health advocate, where do we begin with just grasping with what we are dealing with right now in Namibia?
Thank you for the question. Talking about suicide prevention, even yesterday we had a session at Radio Wato FM, where we shared like the upcoming event that we are going to host on Friday. So now that we are going in a crisis of suicide in our country, and our country isn't topping on the in Africa. So now what we really need to do is that most of the people that we have identified that are going through these problems are men. So now we just have to have that heart of opening up and just telling people that no, for me I'm going through this and that, and then maybe you can be helped. Mm. So now. Yes.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Now that we are in this month, so we have now used this month to do the awareness of suicide. Thereby, we just have to traveling communities just to share with people how just to give. How am I going to say this? Uh-huh. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, now we should now just be going communities to communities just to share awareness on mental health.
Okay. Now, Kafuna, for somebody who is listening to the radio right now and perhaps is also battling suicide thoughts and contemplating suicide. Now, of course, we can't really just what advice would you say to them? I mean, with so many things that contribute to suicide, some can be economic burdens and financial burdens. Some of them can be actually marital crisis and also perhaps children or family related stuff. Just what source of encouragement for you being a mental health advocate give to them?
What I'll just say is that let me just talk about myself. I'm also one of the suicide survivors. So I also wanted to commit suicide. So now after that, then I told myself that no, I just have to stand for it. So now you might be going through a certain problem. So that means that problem is not a permanent problem, it's just a temporary problem. So you just have to talk to someone that you know that this person is this person will help me out. Or you can just reach out now, if this person won't help you out, you just have to now. Because there's even a let's talk about this in our community. In our communities we have people, we have representatives like pastors, headmen and all that. So you can just even try to reach to those people and tell them that no, I'm going through this and that. So those people, they might not really give you or offer you what you are really lacking. Like maybe money, or maybe you lost something and then they now like have to give you what you have lost. So they will just give you advice that you just keep you going, whereby you must not have that heart of doing something that you so. And also maybe just to add on that, I think one of the reasons also as you mentioned them as financial crisis and all that. So you might also there are a lot of people that are going through financial problems. So that doesn't mean that you're now going through financial problems today and then tomorrow you still go through the very same thing. No. So everything has seasons. Today you have this season, but tomorrow you want the season that you had yesterday. So yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You speak very well. I always appreciate it when a guest actually is able to share their personal experiences with others out there, because it makes it more realistic that you know what, you're not the only one who's going through this. I have also gone through something like that. Now for you, where did you go firsthand for help and just breaking the stigma of men not wanting to open up? You know, this is something that health personnel and also society have come to realize, is that a lot of men don't want to open up about the challenges that they are going through, and hence why 82% of this number of cases that are being recorded, the suicide cases, is men, and men don't want to open up. For us women, we can it's quite easier for us to open up to each other, to you know, call a fellow sister and say, hey, this is what I'm passing through in my marriage, or my husband and I are not seeing eye to eye. But for men, in other words, they are very I don't know whether it's a sense of pride, or maybe also not wanting to be judged in a way. Even if they are passing through some marital challenges themselves, they wouldn't want to open up. Just where would you say men should begin, especially with this aspect now of them not really wanting to speak up?
Pardon me, what's the question again?
I'm so sorry. I gave you a mouthful there, right? Just what advice would you then say to the men in terms of opening up? Because we understand that a lot of men actually don't want to open up in regards to the challenges they are facing.
I think it's just a culture whereby, it's an African culture whereby no, men don't cry. That's what we believe. So now,
actually,
and then that culture now, I think, is the one that is now killing us. Because if a man, if you cry, and then people see you as if you are weak. So, and then, at least sometimes crying, especially relieves your anger and stress. So as a man, we should just, what I only want to advise to men is that we should just start crying also. Because if we just keep on keeping the anger to ourselves, that anger is the one that now grows big and bigger, and then it will now hunt us down. So now, and we also have to be open up. We have to open up to our family members, to our friends, and we have to open up to our family members and friends. So if you're going through something, you just have to share to someone that you are close to. That, no, for me, I'm going through this and that. No one will laugh at you. Yes, no one will laugh
actually,
at you.
Actually, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I have realized is that even when I was also going through the very same, when I was also facing one of the problems, I tried now reaching out to a certain friend, and then a friend, when I told him my problem, he thought I was just joking. And then at the end of the day, when he had been now hearing stories, that, oh, this your friend wanted to do this and that, and that's when he had to come back to me and, you know, oh, so why did you not tell me that, no, you were going through this and that? And I came to you first before I wanted now to take a move. See, so now so what you have to do, I even told him that, no, if someone happens to come to you next time, please, you just have to hear out the person's problem first before judging. Because these stories of me, I tell you my problems and then you take it another way around. Or you take that problem, and I think it's even our culture now, whereby I tell someone my problem and then what I'm going to tell that person, going to post it on social media. And then it will now be circulating. So when I see it, it's even going to make me more angry. So, yeah.
Kafuna Patrick, thank you so much for making time for us right here and speaking to us, especially now that we're talking about September being Suicide Prevention Month. And just go out there and continue to make awareness.
And we are even hosting a mental health awareness on Friday here in Rundu.
Mm.
So, yes, so now the main... our main target are the youth, but the main ones are the men, because we realize that men are the ones that are really suffering. So now the whole idea of the event was actually based from what happened in Ohangwena region. So now we don't want that to happen again. So now at least after hosting this event, maybe it's good now to help everyone to stop. To stop keeping problems for themselves.
Mm. When, Rundu, are you raising that awareness?
The awareness will be hosted in Rundu.
Where in Rundu? Well, for those in Rundu who are listening, and they will be very disappointed in you or not.
At Government Hall, at Rundu Town Council.
Okay. Kafuna Patrick, yes. Thank you so much for making time for us right here.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. And there you had it, from mental health advocate Kafuna Patrick, just speaking to us in terms of suicide that is happening right here in Namibia and how perhaps we can help to combat this aspect. Of course, going out and reaching the masses, and especially in the community, I think is some way where we can actually start at the moment. Although awareness has been continuing, I think there needs to be more done. And of course, we applaud everyone that is coming on board to take their part. You just never know. Just you standing up and doing that and speaking about and bringing up our awareness, you'll be surprised to know that you saved two or three people from committing suicide. And perhaps 3-5 years from now, when they'll actually be sharing the story, you'll be surprised that it was because of your efforts that this was done. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Today, the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund of Namibia held public consultations for the proposed amendments to the MVA Fund Act of 2007. And this was held in Commerce Region. And of course, they have been going around the regions, and today in Windhoek was actually the last one. And although they did say that proposals are still welcome via writing to them, even up until the end of September. Now, some of the proposed amendments that the MVA Fund is looking at, and those that have been already proposed, is the over-reliance on fuel levy income. Now, the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund operates through a fuel levy system. The levies are collected via the National Energy Fund, and the levy is at 0.47 cents per liter of fuel consumed. That is towards the MVA fund. Now, the fund is obliged to pay benefits to persons injured or dependents of persons killed in motor vehicle accidents involving motor vehicles powered by electricity or gas. Yet not all those vehicles contribute levies, especially the EV vehicles, that is electrical vehicles. Now, the number of electrical vehicles are around 130 as at of November 2024 and growing. Now, the proposed solution under this is that levies from foreign and locally registered vehicles plus electrical vehicle levy through NEF. That is the National Energy Fund. So in other words, the fund is proposing that apart from the 0.77 cents per liter on every fuel, on per liter of fuel consumed, also levies from foreign and locally registered vehicles. And so questions and just contributions were around there to say that, of course, they wouldn't want obviously to overburden again those that are paying already. So, hence why it is proposed, and everyone, the public and the community, are all welcome to give their inputs. Another proposed amendment is the Monetary Values Fixed in Act. Now, monetary benefits cannot be changed or updated without an amendment to the Act since 2008. For example, MVA Fund's funeral grant is still 7,000 Namibian dollars in 2025. Any person that gets to lose their life, any one of our loved ones that get to lose their lives in a motor vehicle accident, the motor vehicle, that is MVA Fund, is only able to pay out 7,000 Namibian dollars as towards contributions to funeral costs. Now, there's some arguments in that to say, but we are in 2025 and, a coffin or what's that better word for coffin? Casket. It barely costs 7,000 Namibian dollars, and hence why the proposed solution could be have monetary values prescribed in the regulation for easier updates without a legislative amendment process. Now, the same approach as that of social security benefits and fees payable under the Crimes Communication Act. Helena Nashilundo, who was actually presenting this, thoroughly explained it. Another proposed amendment is the limitation on passengers in pickup vehicles. Now, for passengers in pickup vehicles or buggies on the back of vans and trucks, vehicles that cannot be fully affixed with seats and seat belts, in terms of loss of income and injury grant claims, they are reduced by up to 50%. That is what is currently in the act of the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund. Now, the landscape of Namibian train only allows pickups as appropriate means of transport. Rural and remote areas are impractical to apply contributory negligence and public discontent. They have noticed a public discontent via radio and public education talks. So the proposed solution for this is to remove the limitation of 50% reduction. However, they say this is across broad for all vehicles that are not fully asphyxiated with seats and seat belts. Hence, no limitation for employers who did not properly convey their stuff. And then also another last one that I would educate you on this at this point is the extension of loss of income to major dependents such as 18 years above or older. Now, the loss of income is paid to minor dependents who are under 18 years of age at the time of the claim across, for instance, at the date of the accident, until they attain the age of majority or complete their studies after a majority or become financially independent, or they die, whichever one occurs first. Children of the deceased who were majors at the time of death over 18 years but still dependent on the deceased are not allowed to claim loss of income. Only siblings below 18 years old are eligible to claim until 18 years or until their studies are completed. Now, for example, a deceased survived by a 16-year-old and a 20-year-old in their first year at university. The 16-year-old is able to claim money for loss of income from the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, but not the 20-year-old who is then in first year and still needs support in that aspect. Now, a proposed amendment in this regard is to include the major who is still a dependent. So then to pay loss of income to dependents until the time the deceased would have turned 60 years old or until the dependent attains the age of majority or completes his or her first undergraduate qualification after the attainment of the age of majority, becomes financially self-sufficient, or dies, whichever event occurs first. Now, another particular one is that I had a discussion with Helena on, who's doing the presentation, is that for every person that incurs and or happens to be in a motor vehicle accident, they are entitled to up to 1.5 million Namibian dollars in medical funds. In other words, this 1.5 will cover their medical aspects in terms of whether they need to go to a step down facility, they need to go to a private, they need to go for a CT scan, they need to go for everything, will then be covered in that. But there comes a point where some of those people who are then involved in such in motor vehicle accidents deplete this 1.5 million. Why? Medical bills are very, very expensive. And she gave a scenario of a 5-year-old who was, I believe, involved in a car accident, and they needed to be taken, to be airlifted from Rundu. I think I'm speaking out the correction, from Rundu to Windhoek, because there are no neurosurgeons in Rundu, only in Windhoek. So then they had to pay about $290,000+. And now that's coming from that 1.5 million, right? And then when the patient actually comes here and they go to the hospitals, and then you see perhaps the bill goes up to $700,000, and then they go home, get discharged, and then come back, it's still under 1.5, you know, for life, for that whole time that they've been, you know, that they are being treated as a result of the car accident. Now, in terms of rehabilitation, whereby the injured person now has to go home and their house need to be modified, you know, they are now in a wheelchair that also needs to be modified, you know, to be able to just accommodate them. The shower needs to be modified, all that kind of stuff. It is all coming from the 1.5 million. And then we move on to caregivers, where instance now, this particular injured person now needs a caregiver, and this caregiver needs to help them, you know, until they fully recuperate, or maybe they are going to need a caregiver for life. For some people, they sustained very severe injuries. Let's say, for instance, this person sustained, a spinal cord injury, C5, C4, or C6, and they are now, paralyzed, and they were not able to do certain things for themselves anymore. They now need a caregiver. And for some people, they actually need two caregivers. And And even though they are getting, they are entitled to get 1,600 per month for as a disability grant, that is not enough to care for the caregivers and themselves. Now, this amount is also included in that 1.5 million Namibian dollars that is allocated to every person that is involved in a car accident. Now, you see that 1.5 million dollars, at the end of the day, it depletes, and then the MVA's funds hands are tied. They cannot be able to do anything else because that's what the law says. Hence why there is now this public consultations for the proposed amendments to the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund Act of 2007. And this is where you and I come in to make our proposals. Perhaps you or somebody who also have, you can be even a nurse or even a doctor who really understands what's going on, or perhaps you are somebody who has had a loved one, sustain some injuries in a motor vehicle accident, and you understand better where actually this came, maybe where amendments that could be done that could help, our fellow Namibians out there. That is what now the MBA Fund is trying to propose. So perhaps, I mean, recently news had come recently about the 16 people that lost their lives just a few kilometers outside Mariental, including correctional officers and some police officers and two civilians. And a lot of Namibians were actually upset to find out for the first time, because I believe they were finding out for the first time, that MBA Fund is only able to give 7,000 Namibian dollars towards funeral contributions. And of course, a lot of people were really disappointed in that. Now here comes this opportunity for you to be able to actually now make your proposed amendments. And that's what the consultations were all about. Of course, we did reach out to MBA Fund, and hopefully they will do their diligence and one day come and educate the people via Eagle FM platforms. And yeah, and then you can well be educated with that. But for now, let's take a listen to Jolene Cruz. She's the chief legal advisor at the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund.
The current MBA Fund legislation, as per Article 95G, addresses the need of people with injured and motor vehicle accidents, assisting an out-of-work pregnancy through rehabilitation to the point of living productive lives or sustainable livelihoods. The proposed amendments for today to the legislation is further advancing in this article. The MBA's declaration, it states fostering growth, fostering economic growth, inclusiveness and resilience for quality sustainable development, recognizes the complexity of national development processes and interlinkages of developmental challenges, and hence takes an integrated approach, a whole government society approach. The success of the MBA will depend on our long-term working relationships between public entities like ourselves, the private sector, NGOs, development partners, and communities like yourselves today, in large towards a common goal. So, and that's why we are here. We are calling on all of you to give your input, to feel free to even if you believe in something that you wanted to say or ask about, and we didn't ever get this platform. Please feel free to still give us that input to be wiser until the end of September and to remember that. The NBA Fund was established as an agency with the Director of Administration of the Ministry of Finance in 1993. And for more than a decade, it was in operation solely to pay the wages to injured farmers or compensate for their resulting from a road crash where negligence was involved. So today, we are not there anymore, and we are happy. We hope the tribunal are not going to re-emphasize or restate the legislation, as he said earlier, started in 1972. In the beginning, as I recall, before 1990, NDA Fund was not there. NDA Fund was not there. If you were involved in open legal accident, you actually needed to through your lawyers, so to the complex process, complete the claim form and send everything as per the requirements of the legislation in a different country in South Africa. So we sent and we did that, and we also go through this process. We inherited that law after independence. The first law was that they had the 1963 law. The second one was in the 4001 law. These laws still had that particular component where we needed to prove it. So say for instance, you were involved in a motor vehicle accident, and this particular accident was not caused by the negligence of the person.
And there we go. Let's pause here right now and we'll be back shortly with more news. This is On The Radar News Analysis. Now remember, you can also partake in the news analysis right here on Eagle FM, On The Radar News Analysis on 083-288-401. I repeat that, 083-288-401. Your opinions and contributions are always welcome.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Input just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. And of course, now I'm joined in studio by my colleague, Dwight Links. Good afternoon, Dwight, and welcome again on The Radar News Analysis.
You're doing happy, and good afternoon to the listeners.
I'm doing well. Now, Dwight, tell us about the Inception Workshop for Namibia's second Biennial Transparency Report, of course, combined third Biennial Transparency Report and sixth National Communication. Just tell us what it was all about.
Thank you very much, Happy. So specifically, this is associated to the particular nationally determined contributions that Namibia made If people do not know what this means, the nationally determined contributions is Namibia's commitments that we outlined in our, the NDC is something that you submit to the United Nations, specifically to the United Nations, UNFCCC. And this particular framework is something that we all signed up to because the UNFCCC was agreed upon by Namibia in 1995. And Namibia is also a signatory to the Paris Agreement of 2016. And this all, everything has, is associated obviously to climate change and the particular climate change impacts and events. Now, the biennial transparency report the biennial transparency reports and all these particular functions is based upon, how far has Namibia try to achieve some of the particular goals that we enclosed in our own NDC. So you've got to understand, Happy, that when the former Minister of Environment, that being former Minister Paul Mashifeta, had to submit our NDC, that was in 2020 or 2021, one of the 2 years,
mm-hmm.
that any person can find that for free on the internet. We made commitments in that document as a country what we will achieve in terms of playing our part to ensure net zero and, the climate targets by 2030 or by 2050.
Yeah.
The two frames, there are two frames, or multiple ones, but each country identifies individually how they wish to achieve their own particular climate change goals. So in Namibia's, in the particular scenario of a biennial transparency report, what it encloses or what it encases is that Namibia has to disclose, what have we done? So targets, and secondly, what financing was used to achieve these targets and what projects or mitigation projects were placed on the ground to help with achieving these particular things. So if you hear us, us other Eagle FM colleagues go to, Loise in Ondangwa goes to, a gardening project that is meant there to provide food sustainability or food security there in the north. And this is now all about sort of like repurposing and reskilling, people in the community to, to do a little bit to include or different or have a different skill set of agricultural and gardening techniques. And it is sponsored, through a climate mitigation mechanism. That has to be reported back, to the UNFCCC specifically to showcase this is what Namibia tried to do as an example in terms of, achieving food security in that regard. Now, this also means, Happy, that it's not just a country, which is a developing country like Namibia, that has to report what it did with money that it got from other from other sources itself.
Mm-hmm.
It also means, for example, a country like, who can I choose? Germany. A country like Germany, which is obviously now in the global north, they are obviously the countries that are accused of being they are at fault for causing the global climate change that we're all experiencing, because that is the accusation that stands, then they are telling the UNFCCC, hey, listen, we gave Namibia, $50 million for its green hydrogen project to achieve, green transition, the just energy transition that Namibia signed on to. And then they go and report that. And then the UNFCCC turns around and they ask Namibia, hey, Namibia, so Germany says they gave you this particular funding and
mm-hmm,
financing.
Mm-hmm.
Give us proof that you've actually received it and proof of how you used it. So it's a dual mechanism in terms of a dual reporting mechanism. You can also think of it as a two-phase verification system in some sorts. There is another mechanism that exists like this in the world. It's known as the EITI mechanism, the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, which tries to combat the ambiguous information sharing that comes out of, for example, mining, the allocation of mining licensing or the awarding of mining you know, mining endeavors and stuff like that, or even the auctions and stuff like that, so as to fully show that really the financing, the initiative, the projects, the various mechanisms actually help and impact people on the ground, instead of just, you know, putting it in a fancy report in a document that says, we did this much, we did this much, yeah. But does it really translate to what is in reality on the ground? And does what is in reality on the ground translate to what is in the particular document?
Okay. Interesting, yeah. And for the public themselves, how was the engagement there like? Were they asking questions and also just interrogating what was being presented to them?
Happy, this was specifically a workshop, so we the media were only the only sort of like, if I can call it, privileged public members that could attend. The questions that I did ask were ones based upon, does the Pact of the Future, which is the agreement that Namibia and Germany both launched last year just after the United Nations General Assembly, does that have an impact, a direct impact on these particular nationally determined contributions, meaning these promises that Namibia made, as well as also the reporting that has to take place, because remember, this biennial transparency report is based upon Namibia has to give feedback what it has done. Now, I'm sitting here with a time frame in terms of, you know, some feedbacks that have been given by Namibia. So the first feedback Namibia gave was during the development of the second biennial transparency report, and the combined sixth national communication, and also the third biennial transparency report of Namibia to the UNFCCC. So Namibia submitted a review, or yeah, they submitted the second biennial transparency report, meaning the second one, which is which I have in my what you call it in I have it now currently, and we submitted this back in February of this year. There is a planned review on the, I think this was on the 10th of February as well, that was obviously, you know, measured. And then various particular things were also assessed in this reporting phase, because there's another reporting phase that Namibia has to submit to, and this is supposedly in October next month. That's obviously what one of the speakers, Mr. Regan Chunga from Ministry of Environment, cited. This whole discussion, Happy, is one based upon how do we understand, or how do we actually track and trace developments under the promises that Namibia cited in its own, sort of like, if we can call it like a promissory document, to the UNFCCC, how we will try and maintain temperature levels, the 1.5 and the 2 degrees Celsius, which is the maximum mark that global warming is tolerated. Past that mark, it becomes sort of like a picture of a point of no return. So Namibia stated its scenario. We have to give in every 2 years reports of what we have done, what we are doing. There's also aspects of confusion, as Mr. Regan Chunga has outlined, that some countries don't understand should they have adopted new treaties that came along in the 2 year time frame from 2023 to 2024 heading into 2025, or should they still stick to the first particular requirements, or let's call them audit framework that they were supposed to commit to in the previous level of promises that they should have achieved. And Namibia is doing its particular part, just to show you that, in terms of achieving its own promises. Now, the notion obviously is that this is all highly technical. This is obviously still not at a high level scenario, because, mind you, Happy, at the end of this month is going to, no, not at the end of this month, 12 days from now, on the 22nd of September, our president would most likely fly to New York for the 80th anniversary of the United Nations General Assembly, which is also the United Nations General Assembly 80, meaning the 80th session. So 80 years and 80 sessions, just so that the listeners know. And from there, afterwards, you start getting the United Nations Conference of Parties climate change engagement, which is slated somewhere in November, when we'll obviously be having our elections in that same period as well, the regional and local authority elections.
Okay.
So just so that Namibians know, you know, it works a little backwards to front, meaning when you look at a new session, a new year, in terms of commitments, global commitments and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Namibia has to meet certain particular sort of like documentary requirements in terms of to see where the development has been going, where funding for various projects have been going.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been traced? Is it transparent enough to say, mm-hmm. yes, you received the million here from, let's say, from China? And did you actually receive this million in Namibia? If Namibia says yes, what did you do with the million?
Mm-hmm.
Namibia has to explain what they did and provide, you know, aspects of proof or aspects of documentation to say that they've actually achieved these particular goals or that they implemented these particular targets.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Anyway, Dwight, thank you so much. That was very clear. Thank you so much for making time for us right here.
Not a problem, and good afternoon to the listeners once again.
Mm-hmm. And there you had it from Dwight Links, just explaining to us UNDP meetings that are being held today. Now, of course, let's pause right here. This is on the Reader News Analysis. You can also partake in the news analysis by dialing 083-288-401. Now, remember, your opinions, questions and contributions are very much welcome right here.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get all your essential products for just 99 Namibian dollars at USave. 1 kilogram each of Rice King Rice, a Top Score or Bokomo Super Maize Meal, Super King White or Brown Sugar, 500 grams Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliters of Right Brand Sunflower Seed Oil. That's 5 products for only 99 Namibian dollars. You save, I save, yes, we all save at USave. Pelvicha University presents new short courses available, Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Law programs, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution, Admission Requirements, Grade 12 Senior Certificate or Equivalent and QF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Certificate in Telecommunications Policy and Regulation. Admission requirements, Grade 12, a Senior Certificate or Equivalent and QF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years of relevant industry experience is required. Now, course cost 5,500 Namibian dollars. Fees can be paid in 3 installments. Application deadline 5th September 2025. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Apply now at www.wu.edu.na.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now at this point we tell you what's making headlines in terms of odd currency compared to other currencies. Now, $1 today will get you $17.57. €1 is $20.56. £1 is $23.78. $1 is equals to $11.61. £1 is $1.32. £1 Ugandan shilling is equals to 0.0050 Namibian dollars. And we take you to trading economics. But before we do that, let's make room for a scheduled commercial break. But we'll be back shortly. Stay with us.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates.
Who are we, you ask? The National Road Safety Council is a statutory body established in 1996 with a legal mandate to promote and manage road safety across Namibia. We believe every accident is preventable and every life is precious. Our mission is to make our roads, vehicles, and users safer based on effective road safety management. So, join our unwavering vision and commitment to zero deaths and serious injuries. Visit www.nisc.org.na to learn more. Do the right thing and save lives.
Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. Now, in terms of trading economics, Ghana's economy expanded 6.3% year on year in the second quarter of 2025. That is up from a revised 5.7% in the previous quarter, now marking the fastest pace since the third quarter of 2024. Growth was led by the services sector, which surged 9.9%, contributing to a 7.8% rise in non-oil GDP, which also includes manufacturing and mining. Agriculture also expanded, while oil output contracted. Now, the average contract interest rate for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages with conforming loan balances at $806.500 or less in the US fell sharply to 6.49% in the week ending September 5th, 2025. Now, the lowest since October 2024, from 6.64% in the previous period. The decline follows a drop in treasury yields after a weaker than expected jobs report fueled expectations that the Fed will resume interest rate cuts this month. Now, mortgage rates declined for the second consecutive week as treasury yields moved lower on data indicating that the labor market is weakening. Now, the downward rate movement spurred the strongest week of borrower demand since 2022, with both purchases and refinance applications moving higher. Industrial production in Iran rose by 10.3% year-on-year in July 2025, slowing from a downwardly revised 11.2% gain in the previous month. Now, this marks the slowest expansion since December 2024, as output moderated in manufacturing industries at 8.2% versus 10% in June. Electricity, gas, steam and air conditioning supply at 13.2% versus 14.5% and transportable goods at 10.4% versus 11.1%. Now, on a monthly basis, industrial production rose by 1.5% in July, rebounding from a revised 12.3% drop in the preceding month. Europe's natural gas futures climbed above $33 per megawatt hour near a two-week high as geopolitical tensions intensified. Now, Israel's strike on Hamas leadership in Qatar raised concerns since Qatar remains a key supplier to Europe, leaving markets wary of possible disruptions ahead of the heating season. Now, at the same time, Russia launched heavy drone attacks on Ukraine, with several drones breaching NATO member Poland's airspace in what its military called an unprecedented violation, prompting a defensive action from Polish and NATO forces. Now, the EU is weighing new sanctions targeting Russian banks and energy firms to pressure Moscow. Despite this risk, Europe's storage levels provide some reassurance, standing at 79.6% capacity, just shy of the 80% November target. Now, additional support comes as maintenance on Norway's continental shelf winds down, ensuring improved supply flexibility in the weeks ahead. And that's what we have for you today in terms of economic indicators. Let's pause here now and we'll be back to tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now for news beyond the borders, we always start off regionally and then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, we bring you international news. We're starting off in South Africa in terms of Tourism Month. Growth of tourism sectors under spotlight in Cape Town.
At the beginning of the year, South Africa has hosted several G20 tourism working group meetings across different provinces. And today, the inaugural Tourism Investment Summit will convene in Cape Town with a view to drive investment and develop a robust investment pipeline for South Africa's tourism industry. Our news anchor, Liesl Wilson, has been monitoring those developments at the summit for us. And the better part of the morning, we'll also be bringing you live crossings to Liesl. So here she is once more. Liesl, good morning. And this investment summit, of course, bringing a lot of hope, hopefully, to many involved in the tourism industry for expanding their businesses.
Well, very good morning. Welcome back. We're still here live at the Tourism Investment Summit that is taking place at the V&A waterfront. In fact, at the Investec Limited buildings. And there's a lot that's expected on the program today because, as mentioned, economic growth and creating jobs is key, but also just beyond it being a leisure activity, and perhaps promoting destinations. It's about exploring decisions, also just doing business differently and development at large. And so as we explore all of this further, I'm now going to be joined by UN Tourism Communications Specialist, Kojo Bentham-Williams. We'll be exploring what tourism has obviously done for the sector and in terms of G20 countries. If we look at some of the stats emerging, we were just looking at how G20 countries, as we know, contribute about 85% of the global GDP. Beyond that, two-thirds of the world's population, 75% of global trade at large, and 69% of that obviously coming through with tourism, and that's in G20 countries alone. So the potential to leverage is enormous. And so as we explore possibilities and probabilities, Kojo, welcome. I'm going to ask you to join us and welcome our viewers. Perhaps talk to us about the importance of the summit in relation to the UN tourism and what's expected on that front as we continue and edge closer to its starting.
Well, thank you so much. I think that the tourism investment summit is very important to development of tourism. And again, if you look at the UN tourism, is a United Nations agency responsible for sustainable tourism and accessible tourism. So we've been knowledge partner of this event, and we've been working with South Africa and G20, and this is the third working session of which the action will be adopted. So it's been an important milestone, and the fact that South Africa is hosting this, in many ways, it's not just South Africa, it's Africa. And the stats that you just mentioned, it also, if you care to know, it's 70% of the source market in Africa come from these countries. So this summit is very important. And think about the fact that, yes, you can have tourism, but the enablers of tourism are in infrastructure and the other things. So we expect that this summit will be able to, invite investors and organizations that want to help push the cost of tourism, because tourism is a key economic driver.
Yeah, Koji, you said a lot, and I know this is going to be explored even further as the summit kicks off. But if we're looking at post-COVID trends as well, what are those trends that are emerging? Experiential, experiences come through more so now than ever. Tell us a little bit more about how key that is to the growth, and perhaps also just looking at the value chain at large with regards to that.
No, but I think you're spot on. I mean, if you look at what happened, we couldn't travel and everything was limited. And what we've seen is that product offering is being some of the things that is driving the change now. And as you mentioned, you realize that destinations and what they are, what people are looking for, yearning for, is the experiences. So necessarily, obviously, you would have the beaches, you have the Table Mountain, but then the experiences that makes one, be able to relate the human element, the human touch. So that's one aspect of it. And also you realize that things around gastronomy is taking shape. And if you look at South Africa, of course, I mean, you're a test case yourself, culinary, wine, etc. We're beginning to make it part of what we sell as people. Mm-hmm. And tourism is the way we live, culture, as well. So what we are seeing is myriad of things is shaping how we're moving tourism. But if you look at the African perspective, we're beginning to see that experiential is taking root, and people are beginning to look at the human capital development, of which you realize that people are beginning to apply themselves. So it's something that has become key in the things that we are seeing shaping tourism these days.
It's cultural exchanges, it's agency as well. And to your point, it's also been reiterated how this is not just for South Africa, it's a gateway for the continent as well. We're looking at some of the other bigger challenges. You've got geopolitics, you've got climate change as well. Yeah. We're looking at sustainable growth, equality, equity as well. But how do you think that's also factored in and how important it is for the summit going forward?
I think that, what is happening in terms of the geopolitics and all we've seen, tourism is the peace driver. So in all of things that we see and the tensions that you see, you realize that people are going to sit on the table as well. And again, it's something that we need to be cognizant of, the fact that tourism allows us to be able to be one. So you can talk about, South-South cooperation. You look at the West, but one thing tourism does is that it has no barrier. And once we eliminate things like visa facilitation and all of that, I mean, I think we are able to use tourism as a key driver and make it as a national development agenda. for our country.
Well, Kojo, obviously there's so much more to explore. I want to thank you for your time with us here on the SABC at this hour. Looking forward to many, many more sentiments and thoughts coming through. Kojo Bentham-Williams, UN Tourism Specialist Communications, you're just joining us here this morning to chat about the importance of tourism with regards to development, particularly amongst G20 countries, how we can also leverage on some of those opportunities. And we'll continue to bring you some of that coverage. As I mentioned earlier on, 8:30 is when that official program kickstarts. So we'll get all those preparations in check, and we'll continue to bring you that as it continues. But now it's back to you in studio. We'll see you in just...
Now, still in South Africa, we are talking about weapons smuggled from Namibia used by WC gangs. Let's take a listen.
I'm at Prime, rather. Let's bring you this particular conversation now. A global initiative against transnational organized crime. This is a report revealing that police and military weapons smuggled from neighboring Namibia are being used by gangs in the Western Cape. It comes as the acting police minister decried the ease with which these weapons are available in the province of the Western Cape. Let's talk now to the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. A senior analyst within that organization is Aaron Heyman, who joins us from Cape Town tonight. Aaron, good evening to you. Thank you very much for your time. So your report suggesting that these weapons are being smuggled from neighboring Namibia. Question is, who's behind it and how are they able to do this undetected?
Good evening, Coley, and a good evening to your listeners and your viewers. So maybe I'll just quickly brief intro into what's actually happening here. Namibia is one of several routes used to smuggle firearms, including AK-47s, to South Africa. There appear to be two sources for these firearms. One is the Namibian police force, and the other is the Namibian military. It's slightly more difficult for gangs to get fully automatic weapons like AK-47s from the legal market, so the availability of military firearms has become a lifeline for gangs and other crime actors looking for more firepower. As part of our research, we interviewed gang members. There have been claims by gangs that they have received firearms from Namibia dating back to 2016. The smuggling route is primarily operated by two South African trucking companies, which specialize in transporting fresh produce, such as fruit and flowers. These products have a short shelf life and need to be moved quickly. So this type of business provides good cover for a smuggling operation that needs to regularly cross country borders. And these companies are also allegedly involved in trafficking other illicit goods such as diamonds and wildlife. The owners of these companies are said to have links, even family ties, to certain Western Cape gangs, but many gangs allegedly rely on the supply of firearms from this route, and there may also be copycats now involved in the smuggling of firearms from Namibia.
Are Namibian authorities alive to this reality?
Yes. Well, let me go into the two types of Namibian authorities that we're talking about here. The Namibian police obviously are aware, and I'll explain now, but, I'll just quickly start with the Namibian police firearms that have ended up on our streets first. So initially investigators were looking into police pistols that were stolen from Namibian police armories. In February 2025, Western Cape Police Commissioner Thembisile Patekile said police have seized more than 90 firearms that could be traced back to Namibia. Namibian police sources told us that 90 of these firearms, so virtually all of them, were Namibian police pistols. The investigations into the theft of firearms from Namibian police stores was sparked by 12 Namibian police pistols that were discovered by chance during a roadblock in Cape Town in October 2020. The suspect that was arrested in that case was a Namibian named Urbanus Shambwako. That name might sound familiar to your audience. That's because former SSA Director Arthur Fraser claimed that Urbanus was one of the people who allegedly broke into President Cyril Ramaphosa's Palapala Lodge in February 2020. And he was sentenced to 20 years imprisonment last year. But so the discovery that these firearms were being siphoned off from police armories led to the arrest of four Namibian police officers in 2022. At that point, the Namibian police did not have a record of what firearms were missing because they did not have a firearms database for the police.
Let's move on with other news. Namibia is positioning itself as Africa's next major oil producer by 2030.
The discovery of oil reserves along Namibia's coastline has caught the eye and interest of major international energy companies. Many of them now want a stake in the country's untapped oil reserves and are investing heavily in offshore exploration drilling, with the hope of finding huge deposits and major success. Authorities in Namibia are on their part laying the groundwork to attract more of such investors.
At the moment, Namibia is a more or less a hot spot for oil and gas exploration. We've been to Namibia for a few years right now, so we have made about three 3D seismic projects, focusing on the Orange Basin, which is, we can see a big potential, obviously. There's a few discoveries.
With Shell and its partners having discovered oil in the Orange Basin, and Total Energies making a similar discovery, work is underway to further explore Namibia's vast oil prospects. According to the government, this could bring close to $500 million annually in state revenue through royalties and taxes, which will boost the local economy. A number of wells sunk in the Orange Basin have shown promising signs that the country's future in oil production looks bright. However, even as oil exploration continues in Namibia and neighboring South Africa, some experts have called for caution to avoid environmental disasters.
We have to have a plan in place to make sure that should there be something like an oil spill or a blowout, we have to make sure that our neighbors, like Namibia, for instance, aren't going to be affected. Now, in terms of international law, it's not domestic law, so this is something that countries around the world are bound by. So I would imagine that they would also have the same imperatives.
For now, many see Namibia as a promising frontier market with enough oil and gas reserves to not only boost its economy, but make it a significant player in the global upstream sector. Travis Andrews, CGTN.
President Hakainde Hichilema of Zambia warns against illegal mining and lawlessness.
The country has witnessed a surge in illegal mining activities, a trend that has in some cases claimed lives. The country has further witnessed mining activities that have caused severe environmental degradation and drained public revenue. These were among the concerns raised by President Hichilema as he officiated at the first ever artisanal and small-scale mining conference in Lusaka.
Safe mining, physical safety, protection. What are the elements of safety? You cannot treat the mineral you mine using mercury. You are polluting the water bodies. We can't clean that gold with mercury because we're going to pollute our streams and rivers because you're using wrong processing methods which are damaging to the environment. Trees will die. Fish will die. We've seen it. Safe mining. We don't want you to die. We want you to mine and become wealthy there. How do we become bad when we ask you to protect your environment? And you get angry, you go in the streets, you start shooting policemen. Kikonge. Icona man. No mine area will be allowed to bring insecurity there.
The president also expressed concern over corruption, the issuance of mining licenses.
You have to mine legally. If we don't have a license there, individual or cooperative or corporate entity, you will not mine there. Because this country, part of its growth agenda is to create an environment of law and order. When there's no law and order, it's sangwapo. This minister's job is to give you licenses when you apply. And there must be no corruption in the issuance of licenses. Citizens must be allowed to have access to licenses. We must have an efficient system in issuance of licenses. That's what you artisanals must be asking this government and this ministry, that we don't want corruption in the issuance of licenses.
With government targeting an ambitious 3 million metric tons of copper by 2031, President Hichilema said measures are already underway to achieve the goal.
We push First Quantum to give us half a million tons. We push Lumwana to give us closer to that. Number two, we push Mopani to move us closer to that. We push KCM to move us closer to that. Four assets potentially could give us 1.5 to 2 million tons, closer to our 3 million tons target. When we set that target, a lot of our competitors in politics said, But to do that, we had to do certain steps, walk certain steps deliberately.
He further explained that revenue from the mining sector is being reinvested into critical social sectors for the benefit of all Zambians.
Why are you misleading citizens that we as a new government has now given away more tax revenue to the mines? We are collecting more money now. Just one revenue line, you can't even compare. 10 to 15 to 60. We have increased the revenue on that revenue line fourfold. Numbers don't lie.
President Hichilema underscored the economic importance of the artisanal and small-scale mining sector, highlighting its potential to create jobs, unlock business opportunities, and boost government revenue. Ruth Chainda, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Ethiopia's new mega dam is causing tensions with Egypt.
Well, Africa's largest hydroelectric project, the Grand Renaissance Dam in Ethiopia, has been inaugurated. The dam is a massive engineering project that has been under construction for over a decade. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and regional leaders attended the inauguration ceremony. The dam is meant to double Ethiopia's electricity output and help supply power to millions. The dam has long been controversial, facing pushback from Ethiopia's neighbours along the Blue Nile River. It promises an energy revolution for the country, but for more than a decade, it has also been a source of deep tensions with nearby Egypt and Sudan, which are downstream from Ethiopia, and fear the negative consequences from the mega dam.
Ethiopia's dam is a project of historic proportions. At more than 145 metres high and stretching nearly 2 kilometres across the Blue Nile River, it's not just Africa's largest hydroelectric dam, it's one of the biggest in the world. The government promised it would transform the economy and the lives of the population.
What we are essentially doing is to meet our electricity demands from one of the cleanest sources of energy. We cannot afford to continue keeping more than 65 million of our people in the dark.
But since its conception and the start of construction in 2011, it has been dogged by controversy. Egypt and Sudan both rejected an initial deal to start building the dam over fears that it would threaten their water supplies. Egypt, for one, depends on the Nile for 97% of its water, and has repeatedly described the dam as an existential threat. Despite efforts over the last decade to defuse tensions, Egypt's president has always been clear about the stakes.
You will develop and grow, and I am with you. But beware that in Egypt, the people live only on the water that comes from this river.
Over the last 5 years, Ethiopia has begun filling the dam despite the lack of agreement with its downstream neighbours. And in 2022, for the first time, started generating electricity. The Prime Minister said the dam would eventually provide power for the estimated 45% of Ethiopians currently with no access to electricity, and also in future allow the country to become Africa's biggest exporter of energy. He also tried once again to reassure Ethiopia's neighbours.
As you can see, this water will generate energy while flowing as it previously flowed to Sudan and Egypt.
For many in Ethiopia, the dam has also become a source of national pride, especially as it was reportedly financed largely by Ethiopia itself without significant outside funding. Yet despite the upside for Ethiopians, critics fear the tensions, with Egypt in particular, could spill over into something bigger.
Well, Moses Crispus Okello is a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies in Addis Ababa. His work focuses on conflict resolution and regional security. Welcome to DW. Before we dive into the problems the dam has caused, let's first recognize what this mega project means, if we could. How significant is it for Ethiopia?
Thanks for having me. For Ethiopia, this is a monumental project. It's a dam that not only promises to transform the lives of approximately 120 million people, it's a dam that also holds a great significance symbolically, in the sense that it was domestically funded. So the psychological impact of this undertaking alone is grave. Throughout the whole week, leading up to today, the news in Ethiopia has really been about this dam. I mean, this just demonstrates the extent to which the dam will not only change Ethiopia's profile economically, but also the extent to which it is able to galvanize the population in the country politically. So this is for Ethiopia indeed a history-changing moment. You could say that between today, on September 9th, 2025, there was an Ethiopia before and an Ethiopia after.
Moses, we've heard in that report that the dam has raised concerns about water security for Ethiopia's neighbours, Sudan and Egypt. How justified are these concerns?
Yes, indeed, from the very beginning of the construction of this dam, water security for Egypt, primarily and secondarily Sudan, have been a major concern. Egypt, that as you correctly say, depends on the Nile for 90% or so of its freshwater sources, believes that the dam will reduce the amount of flow of water that goes down to Cairo and further on to Alexandria. So this is a big concern for Egypt. But Egypt also has another concern in the sense that the Nile also is a symbolic natural resource that politically holds the country together. So the Nile is both a source of water and also a source of identity for Egypt. For Sudan, on the other hand, Sudan floods every year about May to September timeframe, and the Nile, the Gad, therefore has two different meanings for them. On the one hand, there's a belief that it might help control the flooding in Khartoum, but on the other, there's a fear that should the Gad have a fault of any sort, then Khartoum will be flooding. So both Egypt have concerns. Ethiopia has attempted to assuage these concerns, arguing that the engineering fit that the Gad is has safeguards that are able to manage the flow of water. So whether that is true indeed is something that has to be seen going forward. But all the sides in this entanglement believe in their positions, and that's where the tensions and the disagreement between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia come from.
And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loisa Shimi. From Indafa, Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same frequency, right here on the Eagle FM for On the Radar News Analysis from 1300 hours up until 1430. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.